Chapter 3. An Author Prepares. Before we delve into character creation, let's use this chapter to examine the foundational beliefs that underpin a writer's creative work. How do you view the nature of humanity, the influence of culture, the responsibility of authorship? An author's vision of creativity. Creativity as madness. The ancients often portrayed creativity as a trance-like state verging on madness. Modern comedies such as Tom Stoppard's satire of James Joyce in Travesties abet these myths when they characterize artists as neurotics, caught between the obsession to act out their fantasies and the embarrassments they trigger. Creativity as fantasy. In Freud's more compassionate view, creativity begins with the need to escape reality. Because pleasure is constantly contradicted by its consequences, because cake tastes sweet but rots your teeth, because romance puts a smile in your heart, then breaks it, because hopes rarely come true, human beings fantasize. In childhood, we learn to escape life's frictions by retreating into our imaginations, dreaming up adventures, starring ourselves. In adulthood, these daydreams become rather luxurious. All human beings do this. Creativity, however, takes fantasy a critical step further. Artists also dream as if scenarios, but then transport them out of their imaginations and into films, novels, plays, and streaming series. Although their tellings often portray hurtful experiences, the fictional realm poses no actual threat, so character pain simply transfigures into reader-audience pleasure. Creativity as discovery. Neuroscience, in a step toward divining creativity, has mapped the brain's hemispheres and identified their separate powers. The left brain executes the logics of deduction and induction, linear thinking, mathematics, pattern recognition, and language. The right brain commands the logics of causality and analogy, visualization, auditory imagination, nonverbal expression, intuition, rhythm, feelings, and moods. Consider, for example, Carl Sandburg's poem, Fog. The fog comes on little cat feet. It sits looking over harbor and city on silent haunches and then moves on. When imagining this poem, images of cat and fog floated through Sandburg's mind, while his left brain saw two unrelated examples of biology and weather. His right brain noted a connection only a creative mind would spot, and suddenly merged the two into an utterly new third thing, linked by a sense of stillness. As we read the poem, the poignant beauty of his metaphor enriches our inner life with a never-felt-before sensation. The unearthing of an unseen likeness is the most beautiful gift one mind can give another. Creativity is, in essence, the discovery of the third thing. Talent is a duality-seeking sensor that spots hidden analogies between things that already exist. Then, in a creative flash, artists change the known into the new, melding two things into a never-seen-before fusion. In which direction does creativity flow to discover the third thing? Right brain to left, or left brain to right? Particular to universal, or universal to particular? Answer: genius flows in both directions, at times alternating slowly, at other times instantaneously, as reason and imagination inspire each other. For example, consider fantasy. When creating magical characters, writers often begin with archetypes. For example, the wise man, warrior, earth mother. Then bring them down to earth to walk and talk among the common people. A movement then from conceptual to actual. Or when writing a social drama, a writer might start with an actual case taken from the news and then design a cast to express the battle between justice and injustice on a grand symbolic scale. A progression then from actual to conceptual. Compare, for example, two films from 2017, Wonder Woman, in which a goddess descends from heaven to fight in a human war, and Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, in which a gift shop owner's revenge for her daughter's murder becomes a symbolic act. Like the god Hermes, creativity is a wing-footed messenger that flies back and forth between two worlds, rational, irrational, left brain, right brain, taming real-life chaos with aesthetic order. Like a child going out to play, creativity leaves reason at home and saddles up free association for long, galloping rides. When two random thoughts suddenly collide and merge into a third idea, the right brain seizes this gem and hands it over to the left, so the writer can use her conscious skills to fit this shiny piece of originality inside a sketch in progress, reshaping it into a memorable character. Two theories of character creation. How this process unfolds is subject for debate. Do writers invent characters or give them birth? Are characters conscious creations or subconscious manifestations? Invention. Some writers start with an inspiration for a story, then brainstorm and improvise characters with traits and dimensions that fulfill the promise of their original vision. Here's Susan Collins, author of The Hunger Games. Quote, "One night I was lying in bed, very tired, channel surfing. I flipped through images of reality shows where young people competed for millions of dollars or a bachelor or whatever. Then I saw footage from the Iraq War. These two things fused together in an unsettling way. That was the moment I got the idea for Katniss's story." Unquote. Novelist Patrick McGrath often finds his story spark in intriguing real-life behaviors, perhaps something as simple as an odd tone of voice or a hat worn at an eye-catching angle. Then he asks the question, what kind of person would talk in that voice and wear their hat that way? Fingers on his keyboard, he merges his creative talents with a lifetime of observations and personal knowledge of human impulses, transforming the intrigue of a trait into a psychologically compelling character and story. Giving birth. Other writers see themselves as a kind of bystander, a conduit for personalities finding their way into a yet-to-be-written story. Their characters seem to live an independent existence in another realm and then pass through a mental birth canal into the author's awareness. Elizabeth Bowen, in her book Notes on Writing a Novel, says that notion of character creation is misleading. Characters, she feels, pre-exist. They reveal themselves slowly to the novelist's perception, as might a fellow traveler chatting in a dimly lit railway carriage. Elizabeth Strout, author of the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel Olive Kitteridge, says that her characters never echo her personal experiences, as readers often assume. Rather, they come to life mysteriously, organically, in stray scenes or bits of dialogue, and then, through a process she finds difficult to explain, eventually coalesce. She scribbles snippets on scraps of paper and lets the scraps accrue. Discarding some, keeping others, she waits until, quote, characters do their little things and I keep what's truthful, unquote. Novelist Anne Lamott noted, I've always believed that these people inside me, the characters, know who they are and what they're about and what happens, but they need me to help get it down on paper because they don't type. For most writers, the day-in, day-out work of role creation calls on both modes. Surprises from the subconscious, giving birth, and improvisation while pacing a room, invention. With each new character, the writer juggles all sources of inspiration, trying to get the balance just right. There's mystery in creativity, no doubt. But the claim that a character refuses to do what her writer wants her to do strikes me as literary narcissism. Would a composer claim that a chord she wants to play refuses to sound itself? Would a painter claim that the color red has a mind of its own? Certain writers, hoping to make themselves mysterious, want us to believe that writing is dreamlike, that authors simply surrender to native impulses, that they are conduits for instinctive forces beyond their control. This romance has always sounded a bit phony, a bit pretentious. Suppose, like a character created by Woody Allen or Luigi Pirandello, one of your roles stepped out of your telling and into reality. I don't mean into the fantastic realities of The Purple Rose of Cairo or Six Characters in Search of an Author. I mean into actuality. Suppose this character wanted to write her story. Suppose she took over your keyboard. Then suppose this gal discovers she has no talent. Where would you go from there? Characters are works of art, not artists. They manifest in an author's mind and will do exactly what she imagines them doing, although often in surprising ways. Being surprised by your own ideas is a daily experience for the talented writer. The subconscious mind absorbs an artist's direct experience of life and factual researches, as well as the artist's dreams and imaginings, then stirs all of this material into new forms to be sent back to the conscious mind. This work goes on out of sight until suddenly, unexpectedly, insights into behavior and radical fusions of character traits take the writer by surprise. These flashes of genius result from subconscious churnings that go on behind the artist's awareness while she strains against the harness of craft. Like the Lamaze method, creativity gives birth in a wide awake world. No mystical spirit, no daughter of Zeus will descend from Olympus to inspire you. Writing will be what it always has been, giving breath to what you already know. Creative hunger. An artist amasses scraps and smidgens of knowledge over a lifetime of learning, experiencing, and imagining, all swirling in the subconscious mind. A talented right brain gathers random bits, spots links between them, unites two into one, and then passes these creations to the left brain for use. With that, however, arises the artist's persistent problem. Because you can only create from what's already in your mind, your work is strictly limited by the contents of your unthought thoughts. The less you know and experience, the less likely your talent will generate originalities. Contrarywise, the greater your understanding and insight, the more likely your talent will discover new ideas. An ignorant but talented writer may manage pieces of brief beauty, but authorship of complex, full-length works demands a breadth and depth of knowing. The moment your inspiration provides an intriguing but unfamiliar character, you suddenly realize that what you know is not enough. It never is. For your talent to fight above its weight, it needs to bulk up on knowledge. An author is not a pretender, not a literary fake, but somebody with wide, deep awareness, someone with the cerebral power to punch home the truth. For that reason, writers of one-of-a-kind characters underpin their creativity with research. Suppose one night you had this dream. A family dressed in white lab coats feverishly frets over tables filled with a dazzling array of test tubes. Something about this scene wakes you up in a sweat. The next morning, you start making notes in pursuit of this mysterious family. What's in your notes? Questions demanding answers. Who are these characters? Mother, father, son, daughter? Are they scientists or saboteurs? What is their specific task? To create or destroy? Or do the figures in lab coats symbolize something so personal it has nothing to do with science? Whichever way you answer, new questions will rise up to demand answers you may or may not have. Without a reservoir of unique knowledge, you can only imitate other writers. So, how can you create a fascinating cast of original characters? Start by filling files with everything you know about the characters and their world. You may think you know, but you don't know you know until you can write it down. Words spelled out on a page pull you out of self-deception and into reality, pointing the way to creative investigation. For if you find you cannot put your knowledge on paper, it means only one thing. It's time to learn. The four researches that feed creativity. Research travels down four roads: personal, imagined, factual, and actual. 1. Personal research. Your memory collects all the meaningful emotional experiences you have undergone in both reality and fiction. Over time, the origins of these two sources begin to blur because memory stores them in the same mental vault. That's why we often act as if what happened to us were a story, or as if stories actually happened to us. The result, we know far more than we think we know, if we take the pains to explore our past. Inventorying memory is the first and most fundamental form of research. When you struggle to bring truth to light, simply ask, what do I know directly from life that would help me create these characters? Let's say that you're a female writer composing a story that revolves around a patriarchal family, and you envision the son rebelling against his punishing father. How could memory help you create these characters and make this rebellion scene surprising, revealing, and cliché-free? Think back to your childhood. You were no doubt disciplined, but perhaps never severely. Nonetheless, you reacted against your parents' rules. The dynamic of punishment and rebellion, with its core emotions of pain and anger, is universal. Ask yourself, what's the worst emotional pain I've ever suffered? What's the angriest I've ever been? What did I do in pain, in anger? Recreate these scenes from your past and write them down in a vivid, diary-like way. Focus on the inner sensations of your emotions and on their manifestations in physical behavior. What you saw, what you heard, what you felt, and most important, what you said and did. Express these images and actions in language that makes your palms sweat and your heart pound as if it were happening again. Now, go back to your characters. Using your remembrances as a guide, imagine how your past experience might transfer, transform, or even reverse into theirs. 2. Imaginative research. Memory takes whole events from the past and recreates them in the present. Imagination, on the other hand, takes something that happened to you when you were 5 and couples it with something that happened to you when you were 25. It takes an item you read in the news and pairs it with a dream you had one night, blends both of them with words you heard on a street corner, and finally ribbons all three inside an image you saw in a film. Your imagination uses the power of analogy to invent today's holes out of bits of the past. So, before your father and son begin to defy and dominate each other, simply bring them to mind. See them, hear them. Walk around them 360 degrees. Don't make lists of their traits, analyze their motives, or put words in their mouths. Not yet. Instead, take them for a long walk through your imagination. In this early stage, you're trying to gain an overall impression, the kind you might take away after chatting with somebody at a party. But once you decide that a character deserves creation, you have to submerge your imagination in much deeper waters. 3. Book-bound research. If you were to write about a conflicted father and son, you could draw on families you've lived in, families you've observed, and all those you might imagine. But no matter how familiar the subject, you will soon find that memory and imagination take you only so far. The knowledge you have at the beginning of a project is rarely enough to finish it. To that, you must add book profound learning. If you read penetrating works on the psychology and sociology of the parent-child relationship, taking notes as if you were doing a thesis, two powerful things would happen. One, you would discover your family in all the families under study, confirming the truth or untruth of everything you know. You would see that parents and children in differing cultures undergo common pressures and move through similar stages. Each family reacts and adapts in its own special way, but human beings are far more alike than different. Therefore, if you're writing rings true, your particular will become universal as people recognize their personal household in your fictional clan. In other words, your writing will find its readers or audiences. 2. Insights you could never discover on your own will leap off those pages. As what you learn melds with what you know, creative choices flood your mind, one-of-a-kind choices that help you win the war on clichés. 4. Grounded research. Your father-son showdown needs a setting. You may imagine them as equestrians, bickering as they practice for a dressage competition, or under their horse trailer, arguing as they fix a broken hitch, or on the highway home, yelling about who's to blame when the trailer comes loose. Three promising scenes, but you've never witnessed any of them. Now, like a documentary filmmaker, locate these scenes in the real world so you can watch what happens. Talk to the people who live these events and take notes until you master your subject. Never finish writing anything until you feel that you have gone deeper into your subject than anyone who has ever written about such things before, that you have become an absolute authority on your characters and their settings. An author's vision of human nature. Original characters grow out of an original perception of humanity, and so every fine writer develops her personal theory of what makes people do the things they do in the ways they do them. There is no recipe for this. Artists are not necessarily orderly or disciplined, so every writer must piece her concepts into a singular vision her own way. Your personal theory will then flow into your characters, influencing their sense of meaning and purpose, what they ought to do, what they must never do, what they ought to strive for or against, what they may hope to build or destroy, what vision of love and the relationships they work toward, what social changes they want to make, what choices and actions they want to take. How your theory takes shape will depend on how you see mankind. Do you believe in a primal human nature shared by all, or a plasticity that's molded by parental, economic, and cultural forces? Does human nature stay the same from person to person, or differ from men to women, culture to culture, class to class, self to others? To help you test your personal theories against some of history's most prominent beliefs, the following section is divided into two opposite points of view on one grand question. Why do human beings do the things they do? This duality argues the nature versus nurture debate. What matters most? the genes and capacities a person was born with, her intrinsic nature, or the way she was raised and acculturated, her extrinsic nurturing. In other words, who gets the credit for humanity's successes? And who takes the blame for its relentless failures? The two grand theories. When humankind began to think in depth about itself, it developed beliefs to make sense out of chaos. These master creeds tend to split into two contradictory points of view on why human beings do the things they do. They take either the inside-out, subjective, intrinsic view of the self, or the outside-in, objective, extrinsic angle of society. In other words, nature versus nurture. Indian. Let's start with two beliefs from India. Intrinsic. Buddhism teaches that no unchanging soul or permanent identity exists within a human being. Rather, when we hear our thoughts, what we mistake for the me who thinks them, for the conscious self, is in fact a mirage, a non-self. In short, reality exists, but the self is an illusion. Extrinsic. Hinduism proposes the opposite belief. The self exists, but reality is an illusion. The ground for what is unknown and unknowable. Maya, the power of illusion, gives form to formlessness, but conceals and distorts the source. The world we experience with our senses exists, but as a pale imitation of the ultimate reality that hides behind Maya's illusions. This realm is unexplainable, because language itself is a byproduct of Maya. Greek. Greek philosophy, developing at about the same time, contradicted both of these beliefs. Intrinsic. Socrates, in contradiction to Buddhism, argued that the self, far from being an illusion, sits at the center of existence. Quote, "The unexamined life is not worth living," unquote, he taught. Therefore, quote, "Know thyself," unquote. How can we hope for wisdom of the world that surrounds us until we come to terms with the world inside us? How can we understand other human beings until we perceive the humanity within ourselves? Extrinsic. Aristotle, in contradiction to Hinduism, believed that the world is both real and knowable. At heart, we are all political animals, and our natural home is society. Fulfillment consists in the active public exercise of our finest faculties aimed at the betterment of others. The well-lived life displays virtue, excellence, and distinctively rational thought in a like-minded community extended over a lifetime. Chinese. Chinese philosophy parallels both the Greek and the Indian. Intrinsic. Taoism, like Socrates and Buddha, looked out at reality from within the self. This philosophy emphasizes living in harmony with the substance and patterns of the natural, rather than social world. Taoism does not call for elaborate public rituals, but rather simplicity, spontaneity, compassion, and humility, behavior in accordance with the inner spirit of nature. Taoism teaches that mastering others requires force, while mastering the self requires strength. Knowing others is wisdom, while knowing yourself is enlightenment. Extrinsic. Confucius, like Aristotle and Hinduism, believed that well-being depends on a well-ordered society. Confucianism takes society's point of view to emphasize public morality, family loyalty, ancestor veneration, and a strict hierarchy in which elders are respected by their children, husbands by their wives, and in all cases, justice prevails. 19th century. 2,500 years later, philosophy remains split along the same divide. Extrinsic. Karl Marx, like Aristotle, believed that social forces determined consciousness. Like Buddha, Marx felt that a fixed self does not exist. Quote, "All of history is a continuous transformation of human nature." Unquote. Intrinsic. Sigmund Freud reversed Marx. In his theory, the subconscious mind commanded the center of the universe. Social structures beyond the family are irrelevant. His model of inner life comprised three components: id, the source of life's energy or libido; ego, the self or sense of identity; and superego, the conscience. Psychoanalysts since Freud have argued about which of any of these three components is the true self. 20th century. Extrinsic. In the mid-20th century, anthropologist Joseph Campbell invented his radical theory of myth. He took Carl Jung's belief in subconscious primordial archetypes and cast them as roles in an all-purpose story. Campbell claimed that his monomyth had been passed through the ages from culture to culture, when in fact it was more invention than legend. Belief in this monomyth led many writers to reduce action characters to dimensionless cliches. Intrinsic. Psychologist William James viewed inner life as an ongoing contradiction. At times, the private self seems like a solid inner awareness, but then daydreams and confusions liquefy consciousness into ever-changing streams of images and impressions. James wondered, quote, "How can it be that each of us has both a sense of an ongoing, singular identity plus a sense of the very different selves we used to be?" Unquote. How can we be both the one person we know and all the former selves that litter our memories? These Jamesian paradoxes help inspire the authorship of complex characters. 21st century. In the most recent decades, the polarized dialogue on human nature took this form. Extrinsic. Critical theory, also known as postmodernism, is a nurture-based system that sees the mind as a socially conditioned organ. Therefore, the use of one's culture's subjective beliefs to judge another culture's behaviors and values is bigoted. This conviction went so far as to reject the scientific method itself: evidence gathering, experimentation, rational deduction, as biased and culturally skewed. Intrinsic. Cognitive science, the counterpoint to critical theory, grew out of linguistics, IT, and computer research. In this nature-based theory, the mind is a biological computer designed by evolution. CS believes that once we decipher the brain's codes and networks, the ultimate causes of human behavior will, thanks to science, be completely understood. My sense of this intrinsic-extrinsic debate is that life always stirs some of both, but the quality and quantity of influence between genes and culture varies widely. More importantly, however, none of history's belief systems contemplates the impact of coincidence. Consider the research done on identical twins. Two people born genetically the same will, in time, take on distinctively different personalities. Whether they are raised together in the same family or apart in different families, they keep certain similarities but do not remain identical. From twin to twin, therefore, neither nature nor nurture makes the key difference. What does? Randomness. Beginning with the accident of birth, haphazard collisions of worldly forces become a way of life for every human being. A child's genes interplay with the often impulsive behaviors of their parents and siblings. A culture not of her choosing bends and shapes her. She is at the mercy of her teacher-by-teacher education. The same is true of her religious life, service by service, games won and lost, her personal one-of-a-kind encounters with corporate politics, sending her career up and down the pyramid of power, and finally the physical environment, up to and including the weather. Sun-browned kids left to run wild under blue skies are not the same as sun-starved kids raised in a rainy clime watching nature programs on TV. Which direction her life takes, up, down, or neither, turns on luck as much as any other factor. Once chance has done its thing, the character reacts. In reaction to coincidence, the forces of nature and nurture finally come into play. Three keys to authorship. Take from this survey of beliefs what you will, or reject them all. It matters not so long as your insights into humanity go deeper than common experience or routine schooling. To develop your personal theory, focus on a trio of faculties within yourself: moral imagination, logical implication, and self-knowledge. The final fundamental preparation for writing is to focus your unique talents on these three conundrums. Solving them will give you a broader, more reflective understanding of why your characters do the things they do. 1. Moral imagination. Moral imagination means a sensitivity to life's values, an ability to recognize shifting charges, positive versus negative, shifting levels, conscious versus subconscious, shifting intensities, subtle versus overt, the changing qualities that compel and propel people as they decide and act, vacillate and procrastinate in their efforts to confront or evade conflict. To create a complex character, a writer's moral imagination peers into a character's inner realms to identify and measure the values at play in her personal and private lives. Maturity versus immaturity. Honesty versus dishonesty. Generosity versus selfishness. Kindness versus cruelty. All the dynamic charges of human nature. To create a complex setting, a writer clashes the positive and negative charges of its social and physical environment. What's good versus what's evil. Vital versus trivial. Just versus unjust. Meaningful versus meaningless. And so on down life's multitudinous values. Without conflicting values, a story's social setting amounts to little more than a board game. Without an author's moral imagination to align trait against trait, a role adds less than a monopoly token. So, whether a writer starts with a setting and draws characters out of it, or starts with characters and wraps a setting around them, she must ultimately charge both with her perception of life's values. 2. Logical implication. A storyteller must be blessed with a kind of mind that, given a fingertip, takes an arm. Given an arm, takes an army. In the same way that a composer hears a chord and creates a melody, a painter sees a swath and fills a canvas with wonder, a writer takes a hint and imagines a human. You will never meet everyone you need to know to fill multiple casts over a lifetime of storytelling. So instead, develop your power of deductive and inductive implication. Learn to work forward from piece into whole. See a child and imagine her tribe. Work back from whole to a piece. Dream of a teeming city and find a lost soul. 3. Self-knowledge. All writing is autobiographical. Every nugget of improvisation from within yourself and every trigger of inspiration from outside yourself finds its way to the page through you, filtered through your mind, your imagination, your feelings. This does not mean your characters are alter egos, but rather that self-knowledge is the taproot of character creation. You are the only human being you will ever know in depth and breadth. Yours is the only subjectivity you will ever view objectively. Yours is the only inner voice you will ever converse with, self to self. You live in the prison cell of your own mind. So, no matter how long your intimate and personal relationship with another person may last, you will never really know what goes on in her inner world. You can guess at it, but never know it. The only self you will ever know is yours. And even then, there are limits. Because self-deception distorts self-awareness, you never know who you are as well as you think you do. Self-knowledge is imperfect and in many ways fallacious. Nonetheless, it's all you have. So, if you know yourself only in part, and other people even less, how can you create original, complex characters? By asking this question, If I were this character in these circumstances, what would I think, feel, do? Then listen for the honest answer, because it's always correct. You would do the human thing. The more you penetrate the mysteries of your own humanity, the more you're able to understand the humanity of others. Despite clear differences between people, differences of age, gender, race, language, culture, we are all far more alike than we are different. We are all human beings having the same fundamental human experiences. Therefore, if you are thinking it and feeling it inside yourself, you can be certain that every person coming down the street toward you, each in her own way, is thinking and feeling it too. When we realize that the key to character creation is self-knowledge, and then watch the parades of characters numbering into the hundreds who have marched out of the minds of the world's greatest writers, William Shakespeare, Leo Tolstoy, Tennessee Williams, Toni Morrison, William Wyler, Vince Gilligan, Ingmar Bergman, and many, many others. Characters so individual, so fascinating, so memorable, and all the product of one imagination, it dazzles.